listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week I will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. I'll address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, specialized programs, and many ways to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. And I'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, I'm real happy to have as our guest today Dr. Joel K. Kahn, MD. Dr. Kahn is certified by the American Board of International Medicine and its subspecialty board in cardiovascular disease and interventional cardiology. He also holds special certification from the American Society of Nuclear Cardiology and the National Radiation Commission. He has served as a clinical assistant professor of medicine at Wayne State University School of Medicine since 1993. Dr. Kahn is a member of the American Heart Association, the American Society of Preventive Cardiology, and many others. He is the first doctor in Michigan to be certified by the SHAPE Society, which stands for the Society of Heart Attack Prevention and Eradication. Dr. Kahn has authored over 130 articles on heart disease and has done numerous video national presentations. He is a frequent lecturer on heart disease and its prevention and has performed thousands of cardiac catheterizations and stent procedures and has been advising patients on heart healthy programs for over 20 years. Dr. Kahn, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Well, thank you, and thank you so much for having me on. It's a real delight.
Well, I tried to get prepared for this. I went online, checked out, your website, but also went online just to learn a little bit more in regards to some of the things that are going on, some of the things that we can do to help our heart, and. I think my first question is that I'd like to know from you, what are the three or four biggest health habits that we can adopt so that we can all enjoy a healthier life?
Well, that's a great question, and maybe I'll shift to a little memory tool I use when I speak to the public, whether they're children, whether they're adults, which is the four Fs. And I talk about fork, feet, finger, and friends. And they all have a habit. Fork is be very cognizant of what you're eating. I am a big believer, although I practice high-tech cardiology, stents, heart attacks, but food is medicine or food is poison. And I'm sure we'll talk, we live in an absolutely upside-down world nowadays where it's harder to find the food is medicine than it is to find the food is poison. That's the fork. Feet, make sure you move. It doesn't mean you have to train for the LA Marathon. It does mean stand, take a stair, park your car far away, walk in the park, but move. The third F is fingers. Don't smoke. That's about all you need to say. And the fourth F is friendship, fellowship. It turns out not being socially isolated, having peers, whether it's in church, work, bowling clubs, elk clubs, whatever it is, people who have medical illnesses and are isolated are in bigger trouble than people that have friendship. The best example of that is actually in your community, and it's actually Saddleback Church. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about what the Daniel Plan is, because I'm involved to some degree with that, and it's one of the best examples of having peers and enjoying benefits and maybe longevity.
Well, there's no better time than the present. And yes, I am very familiar with Saddleback Church. So please tell us, because I think that particular area you're talking about when you're saying be social is the anxiety, the stress that we put on ourselves. And if I understand you correctly, having these friends, being more social, it's going to help us reduce that stress, which I guess is going to take the pressure off the heart.
It is, and you know, maybe I'll just take a couple of minutes to talk about Saddleback Church and the Daniel Plan. This wasn't scripted, but and how I got involved. But the story is just great, and I hope your listeners do enjoy it. But Pastor Rick Warren, one of the most famous pastors, you know, his book is a huge bestseller, Purpose Driven Life, ballooned up to a very high weight about 2.5-3 years ago. He tells his story about baptizing 500, 600, 700 people a day, and they were all getting so heavy he was blowing his shoulder out baptizing them. He ended up seeking medical advice for himself, discussed with Dr. Mark Hyman on the East Coast that not only is it me, it's my whole congregation, it's our hot dog socials, it's our ice cream socials, it's our donut Sunday mornings, and we have many thousand small Bible groups that are meeting, and they devised a plan. They brought in Dr. Oz, they brought in Dr. Daniel Amen, also a member of your Los Angeles community, a psychiatrist of great renown, and designed a health plan called the Daniel Plan and built it around small groups. And the concepts and the basis are ones that actually, one, they're on their website for free, danielplan.com. You can get some of the best medical education. I don't get paid to endorse it. It's a church-based website, but it's great. You can learn about food allergies. You can learn about the role of stress. You can learn about the role of poor sleep. You can learn about that there are some supplements that you might consider for optimizing your health and for children, and how to do this all with fun. And it worked so well. It's still working well at Saddleback Church because it was built around, if you've got 4, 5, 6 other people, that even if it's once a week for 20 minutes, you can say, Sally, how you doing? I mean, where you been eating lately that you can find healthier foods? What do you find in the grocery stores? Did you get your exercise in this week? And that little bit of conversation, whether it's with family, friends, faith-based, corporate-based, which is another booming area, corporate wellness and having peers in your workplace that are also invested in health, seemed to be the key to make it all rock. Actually, we brought the Daniel Plan to my synagogue in Michigan. We're the first synagogue in the world to kind of modify the evangelical language to the Jewish religion language, but it was the same exact program, was very successful, and I'm now working a bit with Saddleback on their wellness council thanks to some more forward-looking people like Dee Eastman at Saddleback Church. But a great example right at home about needing to become aware of what really can build a healthy foundation for your family for the future.
Well, and I think that's great. And to me, I'm glad you brought that up because it's right on target with what it is we are trying to do. We are trying to educate. We want to educate families on the things that we can do. I mean, not just as adults, but for our children. You know, things that if we can start a little bit earlier, think of how much healthier they're going to be. Whereas, you know, over the last at least generation, it seems like we've done just the opposite. I mean, we've made it the, you know, the generation of the fast food, of the quick grab it, throw it in the microwave and keep moving type of thing. What are some other suggestions of some things that you think we can do in starting our children at a young age to get the right habits that will keep them, as you say, from putting the things in their body that just aren't going to help them?
Yeah, and you know, I'm a eternally optimistic person, but living in what I feel is an eternally pessimistic environment in the United States in terms of achieving your best health, for longevity, for fitness, for joy. It's a tough world, and kids are the ones, unfortunately, probably suffering the most. It really actually starts in pregnancy. We're learning, just to throw a little science in, that the lifestyle of a pregnant woman determines to some degree the genetic makeup and health of a child, that it may even go a generation back. You may be stuck a bit by what you can't change the genes. The genes are going to come down, but we know that there's a field, it's called epigenetics, where what your grandfather and grandmother did, what your parents did during your pregnancy may actually impact the way your genes function. And you're not hopeless because you can change your own gene function by living a healthy lifestyle or living a poor lifestyle. So, I mean, in terms of specifics, you know, it has to start to some degree with food. I mean, I really urge people to look in their pantry, their freezer, their refrigerator, and really see what's in their social sphere. I mean, what's in their food sphere? And I mean, if you're pulling out boxes of Bugles and Pringles and crackers and chips, and the first or the second ingredient is partially hydrogenated corn oil, partially hydrogenated soybean oil, something, I mean, those are kind of partially hydrogenated canola oil. Those are trans fats. Those are a new product in the human food chain of about 30 years ago. They're durable, long-acting fats, so for the corporation, they're inexpensive, and they allow the product to sit on the shelf forever. But we're learning they're directly related to the development of obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, cholesterol problems, and they should be off the market. They're off the market in some parts of this world, but in our country, they're still not off the market. But you can be an educated consumer and say, I'm not buying products that list partially hydrogenated. And as you know, you can even goose that because products can say trans fat free and still have under the limit that the government says for portion size. It's one of the reasons portion size is listed on, you know, you take a product off the shelf, it's a small can, it says 12 servings. Well,
yeah,
probably none of us are taking that can and actually feeding 12 people with it. It's a bit of a game to get your no trans fat labeling, because for that portion size, you're just under the limit. If you eat half the can, you're probably getting a reasonable dose. So that's one example. I'd extend that to some degree to two other areas. These are artificial components that are now in our food chain that are very concerning for the health of children and adults and heart health. That would be high fructose corn syrup. We've got the government subsidies making corn so inexpensive, so that corn syrup is now cheaper than table sugar. Corn syrup is cheaper than molasses and such. Therefore, the manufacturers use it in the pops and the cookies and the cakes and restaurant food and gas station food. Very often, I mean, at better restaurants, I look at the ketchup bottle and the first ingredient on it is high fructose corn syrup. You know, it seems to be a different sugar. It seems to be a product to be avoided. Go to your pantry, go to your refrigerator, read the label, look for the alternative that either has no sugar or I'd rather you eat natural sugar in a small amount than high fructose corn syrup. And the last one, and your reader, your listenership will know this, is the GMO, genetically modified issue. Another brand new kind of 15-year-old field in the food industry where we're ingesting most of our corn and most of our soy, which is most of our processed food, middle of the grocery store. We always say spend your dollars on the outside of the grocery store where the fruits, the vegetables, and the leaner cuts of various food is available. But those boxes in the middle, the gas station boxes, the fast chain boxes that you're buying, they are genetically modified corn and soy. We don't know the whole science, but there seems to be a new medical syndrome where some people are feeling ill, and that includes children, because they're ingesting a lot of foods that are genetically modified. And we do know there's a few animal experiments now, one particular one in mice, where mice fed genetically modified food are growing tumors, where the same family of mice fed non-GMO food are not growing tumors. So when a company like Whole Foods announced last week that by 2018, I think it is, that every product will be labeled yes or no, I mean, we've hit bottom, and we've got to have some corporate responsibility. And if it's not coming from the manufacturers, at least it's coming from some of the retailers. So those are just some red light, green light in terms of what your grocery bag and what your pantry ought to look like. I mean, your freezer, if you have five tubs of ice cream in your freezer and one shriveled apple in your refrigerator, the family's going to have a little trouble to stay weight controlled. And, you know, for kids, you got to control the environment. My favorite thing for kids is a blender or a smoothie, a maker, or there's a product out there, and I don't have any interest in these products, called the Nutribullet that is out on the TVs and can be bought at the stores. But these are little blenders that you can take a handful of frozen berries. You can hide spinach and kale and parsley and greens. You can put, you know, a little protein powder if you want that comes in the stores. You're vegan, non-vegan, and, you know, a kid thinks they're drinking the best Slurpee that came out of one of the stores, and indeed, they got a serving or two of fruits and vegetables, and it's only 7:45 in the morning. And I mean, that's the greatest trick in the world, to start getting some. Yeah, make it a game. Carrots can be airplanes, and celery can be little war things the kids can play with, or sticks and stones. And I think my favorite thing out there right now is the former president of Coca-Cola went through some remorse about 10 years ago, and he's now got a baby carrot distributorship that's geared for kids, and it's calling carrots like junk food because they're, you know, on purpose, hoping that it'll breach the barrier that kids aren't eating vegetables. And just an example of how creative marketing can get this in front of our kids in a way that's pleasing.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up juicing. In our family, our favorite is the carrot apple ginger. That's our favorite one. And I have had a little bit of trouble getting the kids to get into the ones where I put the kale and some of the other stuff and the celery and things like that in it. But the carrot apple ginger seems to be just the right one to wear. So now, you know, I buy carrots and apples, you know, by the bags, you know, so
that that's great. You know,
we always have
if I may change your recipe, not change it, but add to it. I'm a big fan of the science and the health science of spices. And there is tremendous data that, for example, many people have heard of antioxidants. You might take vitamin E or vitamin A or vitamin C. Well, it turns out spices are some of the most amazing antioxidants that are in our homes. And specifically, allspice, cloves, nutmeg, and cinnamon are amongst the kind of sweeter spices, incredibly high in antioxidants. In fact, allspice and cloves are the king of the kingdom. And so you take that, and if you can sneak, particularly in a smoothie, some nutmeg, some cloves, I mean, it gives it a nice flavor. You're giving the kid even more of a nutrition boost, and they're probably not going to turn their nose up at it and drink that juice down. So good for you.
That's great. Good. I like it. Now, and you were also talking about the serving sizes, and that's kind of a pet peeve with me in the sense that, you know, they have all of these energy drinks now, you know, and the can is huge to begin with. And so, and it'll list the sugar and the caffeine content on there. So it'll say, you know, a ton of this and a ton of that or whatever that's in it. And then I'll look at it and go, and this particular can is 3.5 servings. So it's actually 3.5 times whatever that is. And I'm already looking at it going, you know, how did they get, you know, 50 grams of sugar and, you know, 200 milligrams of caffeine or whatever it is. And I'm going, but yet I now have to multiply that by 3.5. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, a couple of comments on what a lot of us call liquid candy, that whole family, or sugar sweetened beverage is the official industry term in the food industry, in the health industry. And that includes the soda pops and even some of the juices that are store bought in plastic containers sitting around for a long time. And then definitely the energy drinks. And from a science and food standpoint, what people need to know, and if you've heard this once, it's good to hear it again, but if you're going to grandma's for dinner, you're an 8-year-old kid, and you eat a Snickers bar that's 200 calories before grandma's dinner, an hour before, the science will show you'll actually tend to eat less at grandma's dinner because you've had an actual food, may not be the world's healthiest food, but you've had an actual food that puts some volume in your belly, stretches your stomach, sends some messages through some hormones to your brain and such. I've had calories. If you instead, an hour before grandma's, drink a 200-calorie can of soda or a energy drink, turns out our body is not geared. We didn't have sugar sweetened beverages till about 100 years ago in Atlanta, and our body and our chemistry and our physiology isn't geared for that. And the science will show you'll go to the grandma's and eat as much as you would have had if you didn't have that liquid snack. So you're eating 200 calories more for the day. You just do that in 3 weeks, you've added a pound, and in a year you've added 15 pounds. Liquid sweetened beverages are just bad for children. They're clearly one of the causes of obesity. And we're seeing, I think, fortunately, just the beginning of an association of some of this marketing in the food industry to children and what was being done with cigarettes and 20 years ago in that industry and how they had to pay for it. And I mean, I'm not anti-capitalism or anti-business, but when they're targeting poor communities and children and misrepresentative sample size labeling like you're mentioning and hiding behind the fact, oh, there's many reasons for obesity in the United States. Well, I mean, the 20-ounce or the super even sized larger drinks and the energy drinks and how they're sponsoring school events and sports events, it's a big part of the problem. And, you know, somebody needs to own up to it. At least as parents, we can try to put our foot down and limit it or eliminate it from our, you know, children's environment.
Well, now the second thing you brought up, which was feet, which had to do with movement. So, and I know our main subject here has to do with the heart. So, how much exercise is enough, and how much is too much?
Yeah, well, I just spent all day yesterday preparing 3 hours of lectures for university on that exact question, and it had to be a very academic approach. But there's enough data now. In medicine, we talk about something called a U-shaped curve. If your blood pressure is too high, it's bad for you. If you bring it down, it's better for you. But if you drop it too much, the mortality and the risk actually starts going up. So there's a sweet spot. You know, there's a dose for blood pressure. You want it 120 over 70, not 80 over 60. That same curve is now being described, surprisingly, for exercise, that lack of exercise is a terrible health problem. If you let your fitness diminish as a child and into your adulthood, and you can't climb your 2-3 flights of stairs, and you can't make it through the mall, and you can't keep up with your peers, that's a big problem. And then as you begin to exercise 2-3 hours a week, moderate exercise, varying cardio, varying strength training, varying some mind-body yoga, flexibility and such, you clearly derive a major benefit. People need to move, stand, walk. I'm doing this interview standing because I'm just not going to sit if I don't need to. But there is the other side of the curve, which is now being described. If you're out there training for marathon year after year after year, don't stop if you love it. Don't stop if it gives your life definition. But if you think that's anti-aging, and if you think that's avoiding health problems, it's actually turning out it's the opposite. That a big group of data out of Copenhagen just came out that runners of marathon after marathon after marathon are perhaps experiencing accelerated heart disease and accelerated scarring in the heart. And whether they're living shorter than others isn't clear, but if they're having more heart disease, a couch potato in Copenhagen has less heart disease on average than a veteran marathon runner who's been running, even though the marathon runners are leaner and the cholesterol numbers are better, but it is stressful. I mean, it is stressful to the human body to do the ultra-endurance training. And there are some strategies around it. That's what I was writing and researching in terms of some vitamins and some alternatives. But you want a sweet spot. I mean, it's kind of good news for people. There's no excuse for being a couch potato. You need to, if all you can do is walk, walk. We're built to walk. But if you can swim, if you can dance, if you can do any other activity to get your heart rate up intermittently, and some strength training, which is very good for your testosterone, guys, and some flexibility, great. But, you know, it may be that 3 hours a week, maybe if you're a runner, running no more than about 3 miles at a stretch, and maybe not breaking much beyond the 8 to 10 minute per mile barrier. Whereas, you know, a marathoner might be trying to go for 5 to 6 minutes per mile and all. It may be better for your health if you really want to be around for a long time. So really interesting data. But the bottom line is that's not an excuse to not move. I mean, you gotta involve movement in kids. And I mean, we should have gym back in schools, but if we don't, then we got to make sure that family time and YMCAs, you know, other access to physical fitness is widely available for children. And, yeah, you know, that is, I love what Michelle Obama's doing. She's more addressing fitness than food, but, you know, we got multiple levels of the issues, so that's a great way to go. We've actually got a tremendous non-for-profit in Detroit teaching inner-city kids actually yoga. They love it. They love the mat. They love the whole thing, the music. You know, there's a bunch of different ways to get at it, but everything's good except for sitting still.
Yep. And in fact, and that's another thing that that we do, which is yoga, but we do Bikram yoga. Any thoughts on how the hot yoga affects your heart in comparison to regular yoga?
I don't have a direct comment. I am both a practitioner of yoga a few times a week, hot yoga, but not Bikram hot. I don't know, I think that's about 120 degrees in the room, and I'm usually at about 100 degrees. But I will make a couple comments. There are definite cardiovascular benefit to yoga. There's been reductions in blood pressure, those that do regular yoga practice. There's reductions in a heart rhythm called atrial fibrillation of those that do regular yoga practice. And even potentially cholesterol falls. So it's a great thing to do. It does combine a lot of strength training with cardio, with mind-body, and God knows at 120 degrees you're going to get a pretty good cardio workout. There is also some separate data that sauna treatment. I am getting off on a fringe, but these things are actually medically supported. There's a lot of literature out of Japan that dry sauna, what's called infrared sauna, which is about 140 degrees, is actually very good for your heart. It actually does some very wonderful things for your blood vessels. Now, we're not talking children here. We're talking more adults and even cardiac patients. So I don't know. It's an experiment that, to my knowledge, hasn't been done. A cooler yoga versus ultra hot yoga, but I'd grab anything you can. Just stay hydrated and drink a lot of water after the class. I put out these little interesting health articles on a website called Mind Body Green, and I've written one both on yoga for the heart and on sauna for the heart. Again, I don't have any investment in that, but people can check that out if they'd like.
Well, now, are those also linked to your site? And let me tell everybody your site. Your site, we have www.drkahn.com. It's
just add a J in there, DRJKAHN, J for Joel. So
DRJ.
It would be seven letters. Yeah, DRJKAHN, right?
Yeah.
And, yes, they are linked there. And there's a little racy one this week about green vegetables and sexual function. So, you might not want your kids to read that right away. But they will start eating their kale and their arugula and their mushrooms.
Hey, minor teenagers, that might be the one they should
be. That might be the hook.
Yeah, that might get them going.
I call it Kaylee Alice instead of Cialis because it's pretty much scientifically works similarly. But let's not go there on this show.
Okay, well, and, I was just thinking, okay, now we are spending time, we are getting up, we are juicing, we are making sure that we are walking or that we are doing yoga, that we are exercising. Now, we have to squeeze in some time to work in there, so as we add all of these things, how important is sleep to our health?
That is also, that's in my own life, a challenge. I've been, I'm in my early to mid-50s, and I've been famous around town for being at the health club at 4:45 in the morning, day after day after day. And I've actually cut that back. Partly I don't do 90-minute workouts as much as I used to for the reasons I just mentioned. And partly the science behind sleep is so much stronger than it used to be. Why are we sleeping less? And we probably are. Just look at your cell phone, look at your laptop on your bed, look at your high definition TV and 248 channels you can watch 24/7. Plus, a lot of us have bigger responsibilities at a job that may not be paying anymore. The economy's tough. You want to do as good a job as you can. We're just doing a lot of stuff. Anybody that's a Facebook friend with me knows I post at 1 and 2 in the morning quite frequently. But then I'm up for 30 minutes. I do some stuff. I go back to bed. So it's very important. There's actual disordered sleep with the obesity crisis amongst teenagers, sadly, amongst adults. One of the most common manifestations or problems of obesity is sleep apnea. The tissues around our tonsils and our upper airways get full of fat. And they close off at night when we're not fully alert and we snore, we stop breathing. And those periods are very stressful on the body. Our adrenaline levels shoot up, our oxygen levels fall, our brain takes a hit, our heart takes a hit. So if your loved one is snoring loud and stopping breathing or you got to turn them over, and particularly if they're overweight, but it doesn't require that, they really need to be checked for sleep apnea. And the root cause is get the weight under control and all. Some of them have ear, nose, and throat issues that need to be addressed, and maybe it'd be a quick victory. But for the rest of us, it looks like there's that same sweet spot we talked about for running and blood pressure, but 7 to 8 hours a day if possible. More than that isn't all that beneficial, and less than that you start to see a fall off in efficiency and maybe in health. So it's a challenge. I got a few of my most ultra-healthy medical friends that really believe from 8 or 9 p.m. to about 4 a.m. is the sweet spot to sleep, and they have regimented their lives. These are full faculty professors to get in bed by 9 p.m. and get up at 4 a.m. and start doing some desk work. So that's the ultimate sweet spot for most of us. That's not going to work. We're just getting kids to bed and starting to do laundry and pack lunches and all the rest by 9 p.m. But for those you're running on 4 to 5 hours of sleep every night chronically, for your health, you need to relook at it. I don't have the solution, but because I think it's a large segment of all my friends are on that schedule.
Right. Well, I don't know how, you know, how it's affecting the heart, but I know that when I went through a phase of that, where I thought that I could push, you know, that this felt good and I was getting so much done, what I found was that at a point in time, my body just gave up. I mean, it just went, okay, that's it. And it told my mind that if you don't stop, we're going to stop you.
That's actually something often called adrenal fatigue. Your adrenal glands above your kidneys make your cortisol, your norepinephrine, your epinephrine, your adrenaline. And if you're running hardcore, stressed, poor sleep, you ultimately exhaust the ability of your adrenal glands to make these important hormones, particularly cortisol. And then they're high because you're stressed out. But then when the adrenals give up, they fall, and you just can't do what you're supposed to do. And there are some herbs and some remedies that way. And then it's just lifestyle reevaluation and getting wise enough to say, you know, we're not all 19 years old anymore, and we need to get some rest. But go try and tell that to a teenager.
Exactly. Well, we're going to take not a rest, but we're going to take a little break. We will be right back. We are talking to Dr. Joel Kahn, and if you want to pull up his site while we take a break, you can go to it is drjkahn.com. Check it out. Pull up another window and stay with us, and we will be right back in about 1 minute.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And you're back with Answers for the Family. We're talking with Dr. Joel Kahn. And he was just talking a little bit about cortisol and how apparently by not sleeping and running ourselves to the nth degree, we can cause that to, I guess, break down or not perform. How does that work? I mean, I've learned a little bit about this. How does that work from the standpoint that if you're breaking the cortisol down, is that keeping us from breaking down fat? I've been told, I guess, cortisol plays a pretty big part in that.
Yeah, cortisol is one of the key hormones in stress. When we're under stress physically, mentally, poor sleep, if our blood sugars are dropping because we aren't eating regularly and eating poor quality foods. And if you reach a point where your adrenal glands can no longer pump out adequate cortisol, there's supposed to be much of the body works on a rise and fall of hormone levels, and cortisol particularly has this very classic pattern of rising during the day, falling during the night. You can have this checked by blood or more commonly saliva samples by an appropriate doctor. But if your body has broken down in that we call it diurnal variation, or a biological clock is broken, you're going to feel tired. And until you clean up your diet, clean up your sleep, there are some natural supplements that may help. Meditate. Yoga, mind body, Tai Chi, Qigong, these mind body techniques are actually very good for trying to get that adrenal cycle back on. You're going to be running out of gas and you might be shortening your lifespan. So it's the Western crazy life, the Studio 54 life, going back a few decades. They're bringing that one up, but we pay a price for it.
Well, let's talk about now genetics. I've had somebody on before where they talked a lot about, you know, that so much of this is genetics. I mean, at this point in time, I mean, how much of it is genetics, and if somebody has what they would refer to as bad genes, are they doomed? Or if they have good genes, can they just pretty much get away with everything? You know, I've had friends that have said, because I've stayed fairly fit, I'm about the same age as you, and stayed pretty fit, and I've had friends that have, you know, I haven't seen in a while, and I'll see them, and they've put on quite a bit of weight, and they've said, oh, well, you know, you must have good genes, you know, or something like that. Well, how much of that is true, and how much of that is, you know, is what I'm doing differently?
Yeah, and good for you, and, you know, and there probably are, as I mentioned, we've learned now that we have broken the human DNA code, that there are fewer genes than we thought. There's about 25,000 gene pairs in our body. I think I've been told this is about as many as in a roach. We're not that much genetically more diverse. I can't verify that, but it's not as many as they thought before they broke the code. There's more of these what are called SNPs, but there's more. Your genes may have little variations, and that actually may determine more about your health. Whatever that is, you can't directly control that. What we've learned, this is some of the most exciting science, it goes back to good nutrition, good lifestyle, is that our genes might make a lot of a product or a little of a product. That product might be involved in cancer prevention or cancer aggravation, for example, and we can influence that process, the modification of genes. It's called epigenetics, or if it's nutrition, we're talking about is nutrigenetics. So, for example, the best example I can share with your listeners is right again in California, Sausalito, the very famous cardiologist, Dr. Dean Ornish, who kind of did some breakthrough work in the late 80s, early 90s, and continues to do work, where he showed in heart patients who were fed nearly or completely vegan-based, plant-based diets, along with some stress reduction, along with some exercise, actually saw some of the plaque in their heart arteries diminish over time, didn't need bypass, didn't need stent, didn't need as many medications. And he published that and wrote many wonderful books, and one of the icons, maybe the five or six top people who got this early on, that heart disease could be prevented and reversed with proper lifestyle. And much of that, frankly, is a very vegetarian approach. So let's get to genes. He, in the mid part of the last decade, got 100 patients with prostate cancer, low-grade prostate cancer, where the urologist was saying, we're going to watch you. And he took 100 of those men and put them on his heart diet, put them on essentially a vegan diet, and took the other 50 and said, follow your urologist's care and just eat the way you've been eating. He involved a woman named Elizabeth Blackburn, who is won the Nobel Prize for genetic work. And something called telomeres. And he published that if you put a prostate cancer patient on a vegan diet for 3 months, they actually measured which genes were making which proteins in these people. And if I remember, about 80 genes got turned on and 400 genes got turned off, and I'm in the ballpark. And it was all because of diet. It wasn't a drug. So you can influence what your genes are doing. You can influence it by food. We know that. There's been reproductions of this. You can influence it by proper sleep. You can influence it by stress, mind-body management. You're not stuck with bad genes that you have no control over. You can't change the color of your hair and the color of your eyes by food. I mean, these are the black, white, yes, no genes. But the rest of it is a complex interplay of what we bathe over our genetic material. And when it's a good blood from good food and lack of smoking and proper rest and low hormones from stress, we're actually promoting health. Very exciting. So nobody is trapped.
That's good. When you were mentioning about we can influence with exercise, we can influence with food, and then you said something in regards to about someone that had cancer, which made me think, how much can we influence or fight cancer with the water that we drink? What I'm getting to is the pH balance in the water. Have you done any studies on that? And how much of an influence does that have based on this theory that says that cancer can't live in a high pH environment?
Yeah. You know, I'll answer it from a big picture perspective, then your specific question. The general number amongst lifestyle-oriented physicians and experts in this field, Dr. David Katz at Yale, for example, and others, Yale University, is that 80 to 90% of heart disease, diabetes, and maybe 60% of cancer is completely attributable to lifestyle choices, so that you can reduce or unfortunately also increase your odds of getting breast cancer, colon cancer, pancreatic cancer, and heart disease by the Western lifestyle. But if you wake up and spend some time reading some books and getting some education, you can also turn that tide in your favor. Huge numbers, maybe 60% for cancer. Cancer still may have a stronger genetic component. In your specific question, you're right. An acidic environment is felt to be key for the promotion of cancer growth. I'm not certain about the pH of water issue. I mean, I'm a warm water, glass of water with a slice of lemon in the morning, which for reasons I still don't get is more alkaline than acidic, even though I'm putting a lemon in it, and I do that. But what I can tell you is when you eat the Western diet, which is high in dairy, high in eggs, high in meat, you're eating, you know, animal-based protein, which acidifies the body. And that is, I believe, the bigger risk to people in terms of an environment that's acidic. It causes bones to break down, and that's why we're the highest dairy consumption country, yet our osteoporosis rates are the highest, because we are breaking down bone to buffer the acid. But that's not, I don't believe, acid predominantly from water. I think it's acid from, you know, hundreds of pounds of meat and cheese and eggs and dairy every year that Americans consume. And if you really want to, you know, you just got to read the literature. The American Cancer Society, what do they say? Fruits and vegetables as a regular part of our diet will decrease our risk of cancer. And whether it's through acidification and alkalization, whether it's through phytonutrients, these super chemicals that are only found in vegetables and fruits, I give a little lecture, you know, why is a chicken never a broccoli? And I'd, you know, what's in broccoli? I mean, you got fiber in broccoli. You'll never find fiber in chicken. And if you're not eating fiber, you're increasing your risk of cancer dramatically. You're going to find vitamins in broccoli. You'll never find the vitamins in a chicken. You're going to find super chemicals, healthy chemicals, something called sulforaphane in broccoli. You can't find phytonutrients in a piece of chicken ever. And, you know, antioxidants, you're only going to find in the vegetable, fruit, berry, nut world. You're never going to find in a piece of chicken. So I'm not saying the world needs to turn vegan, although that would be a very healthy world, and that is what the United Nations has said we need to do by 2050 to allow 10 billion people to live on this planet and not live in cow poop up to our ankles, which is what they said exactly. But that will alkalinize your body. That is what they said exactly. We can't ever raise enough animals by 2050 to feed all the people in the world that want to have meat 2 to 3 times a day. So that's the United Nations. That's not my own personal opinion, but it is interesting.
Obviously the vitamin market is a huge market out there. How much of that, I mean, I've heard different things. On the one hand, you take vitamins, do that even if you're already healthy. On the other hand, you hear the thing of, well, 90% of it just kind of runs through your system. So for those of us that feel that we are eating fairly healthy, should we still be taking vitamins and minerals and such as a supplement?
It's, again, just an absolutely great question. It's relevant to families and children. And I think there's a couple levels of answers. Number one, the hottest vitamin out there in the last 5 to 10 years is vitamin D, which has been described and known for 50 years as a bone-healthy vitamin. But now we understand it's crucial in blood pressure control. People with high blood pressure that don't know their vitamin D level aren't really getting a good look at the whole picture. It may be crucial in congestive heart failure, and cardiac function, blood vessel function, and probably cancer prevention too. So I've now for about 5 years been having every patient get their vitamin D levels checked regularly. About 80% of people are low. My doctor friends in L.A. tell me it's 80% in L.A. Most of you guys aren't sitting out there in bikinis 4 hours a day. You're working indoors and driving indoors and all the rest. And getting your vitamin D level normal, which is going to be sunshine, but for most of us it's going to be taking a supplement, is a vitamin that most of the medical community is coming to realize is a simple one. And the U.S. government talks about 800 IU, international units, a day. most of the way I practice is 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 IU a day, and I'm doing it by blood tests, trying to get people's blood levels to a reasonable level. So that's an easy one. One of the concerns, I mean, there have been a number of studies on multivitamins that have been somewhat disappointing, and the general quality of multivitamins at the corner drugstore is pretty poor. Most of them are synthetic. They actually are made from petrochemicals, so you're taking a vitamin. The bottle's plastic. The vitamin's plastic. The capsule it's in may be coated with rather concerning items. Some of these are made. There actually is some data that Ayurvedic vitamins, which come from the Indian world, can actually sometimes have lead and mercury in them, the very kind of toxic substances you're trying to run away from. You got to be cautious. I think the vitamin world is a world that if you're going to get into, you may need to spend a few more dollars and talk to somebody knowledgeable, talk to your physician, find a reasonable physician. One of the concerns is that, again, the whole world's falling apart. I don't really believe that, but I am well read on the subject, is the quality of the soil has gone down tremendously. Factory farming, they're not rotating crops, they're not letting land sit fallow for a year. And you can take a pound of spinach and it's going to have 50% or 75% less iron in it than a pound of spinach had 40 years ago. You can be eating very healthy and still not getting all the nutrition you need. So I personally, and I do recommend to patients to take a good quality multivitamin, natural based. I want them to take something that isn't synthetic vitamins. And I believe you can do that for certain medical conditions. High blood pressure, it's been shown, if you can replace people's mineral deficiencies, magnesium deficiencies, their blood pressure may respond. That's also true for replacing their vitamin D. Congestive heart failure, cardiac syndromes, I found respond very well. I don't sell vitamins in my office. I don't have a financial conflict. There's nothing wrong with doctors that do, but I'm just talking my own experience. So I'm very up on the science. Is there a downside? I mean, the studies I was doing yesterday on marathon running, I pulled out an article in one of the marathon magazines. It was a program of vitamins to train and take during the day of your marathon. Well, when I went to the science, the 5 or 6 vitamins that were said absolutely essential and crucial by the author, who happened to be a tax attorney, but he's writing medical articles in a runner's magazine, you really couldn't find support for all but one of the 5 or 6. And he missed a few that probably actually do have support. It's a little hard to get into the medical literature and find what it says. So it remains important for people to get credible information. The DanielPlan.com, again, right. No financial tie, is a great place. There's some good information on vitamins that people can read about, or many good books out there, magazines. You probably want to spend a little time. And we know there's some of the shows out there that are talking about the vitamin of the day and the new weight loss supplement of the week. And I'd be a little cautious about that fervor. There is no vitamin that is consistently shown to help weight loss at this point. And if there was, the owners would all be multi-billionaires.
Absolutely.
It just has, whether it's a dingleberry or or anything, it just has not shown scientifically to help.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've got an instant message coming over right now, and this one says, our family has a history of heart disease and diabetes. I'm turning 45 next year, and I am very apprehensive that I am next on the list. I admit my diet has not been the best. I'm 25 pounds overweight, and the stress of my job and family are taking a huge toll on my overall health. Is it too late to reverse the damage, and do you have a book, or can you recommend one that would be beneficial?
Okay. That's actually a great question, and I'd love this person to do 3 things. I think they should have 2 blood tests. They should have a blood test called a high sensitivity C-reactive protein, CRP. Any doctor's office, every hospital runs it. It's covered by insurance plans. It tells you if your body is being irritated by inflammation from poor quality foods, an inflamed GI tract, poor dental health, poor sleep, high fructose corn syrup, trans fats, and such. And that's a simple test. You should probably have an advanced cholesterol profile, not just the church-based or office-based 4 or 5 numbers, but You can look at a website called theparticletest.com, T-E-S-T, the particle test. It's one of the companies that makes an advanced cholesterol test covered by most insurance companies. Find out the size of your cholesterol particles, the number of your cholesterol particles. You might even go beyond that, but that's a start. And the third one I check, there's something called a coronary calcium CAT scan score. You lie in a CAT scanner. This is not for children. This is for 45-year-olds with heart risk or 50-year-olds. You lie in a CAT scanner for about 10 seconds. There's no IV. There's no iodine. You hold your breath, and a CAT scan of your heart arteries is made. If your heart arteries are showing calcium, because it's called a calcium CAT scan, you are experiencing early heart disease that hasn't yet been picked up. This used to be a $700 cash pay test. Most insurance companies still don't cover it. My hospital in Detroit does it for $48. Most places do it for $100 to $200. You'll maybe want to do it once, and if it's normal, if you get a zero, maybe do it in 10 years. You don't want radiation you don't need. And if you're perfect health, I'm not sure you need it. But if you've got diabetes or smoking or a strong family history, find out that you're a zero and take a little breath. But if you're a 300, a 500, an 800, you need to get to a preventive specialist and work with them and make a lot of changes as quick as you can. Can you reverse it? Absolutely. Dr. Ornish has shown you can reverse plaque with diet. Dr. Esselstyn in Cleveland has shown you can reverse plaque with diet. There's a study published 2 weeks ago suggesting you might benefit yourself reversing plaque with chelation, and every cardiologist in the country just threw tomatoes at me, but that was a scientific study presented 2-3 weeks ago, so let's talk about it. But there is science. I wouldn't say it until about 3 weeks ago. I never would have said that. You know, let's throw in the exercise and the sleep. It's very hopeful. Dr. Ornish, Dean Ornish, has a book called The Spectrum. Great book. He's actually demonstrated it. Dr. Esselstyn has a book called Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease. And I'll have a book out at the end of the year called Blank, because we haven't decided on a title. So we'll talk at the end of the year.
Absolutely. And you know, Dr. Khan, we are out of time, but thank you so much. And let's make sure that when this book comes out towards the end of the year, I'd love to get you back on. I would love to talk more about this. I think this is so important for everybody. And you really have, you've done a great job. You have educated us. And I hope as well for the people out there that they're now inspired to do something.
Well, I give you credit for bringing the topic up. It's a dangerous world. And your listeners are 1 hour ahead of the rest of the public. So share the information, eat your greens, get up and move, and don't smoke. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. And bye-bye. for everybody out there, if you're driving, if you weren't able to sit and write down some of the things that Dr. Khan brought up, you can come back to the site later on. This show will be available to you. You know, get that information down. That was really valuable stuff. So come back on the site. You can listen to it again. You can recommend it to people that you know that need these things. Tell them, look, go to our site. It is Answers, the numeral 4, thefamilyblog.com. Get this information. It may just save your life. Have a great week. Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.